Welcome to the Investing in Real Estate podcast. I am Clayton Morris.
Yes, he is. He's all warmed up. He warmed up the old vocal cords. Mm-hmm. I'm Natalie Morris. I'm ready too.
You ready?
Let's do the thing.
So this is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating long-term cash flow. And I am fresh off a trip to the Midwest meeting with my team. I think I looked at 70 houses, 60 houses.
And you don't smell so fresh.
No.
After a long flight home.
Going through some of the houses I went through where there's like floorboards falling through and all kinds of stuff. It's always good times, but I love it. So anyway, today we're going to talk about, and you know, the areas where we invest in are areas that are investor friendly.
Yes, they are.
Or there are, you know, there are things that might not be super investor friendly, but mostly they are. And that's why we invest there.
Mostly.
So today on the podcast, we're going to talk about how to identify those landlord friendly cities that, you know, are conducive to long-term buy and hold. And look, the idea is you want to create cash flow where that's hands-off. You want to be a hands-off investor. Well, part of being hands-off is not having people all up in your grill.
All up in your business.
You know, this is like one of those Saturday Night Live sketches. Like,
why? Late at night.
And right.
This is not when we usually podcast since Clayton was on a flight today. So I'm in a bit of a silly mood now that my kids are in bed. But the reason we decided to do this podcast is because sometimes you get these obstacles as a landlord and you think to yourself, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done this. When really they're just sort of speed bumps because there are certain systems in place in certain municipalities that can be tough to handle. So it's a matter of setting your expectations. And if you know that some places are going to be easier than others and you've done your research, then you won't feel so discouraged, because otherwise, you know, there have been times when we get notices in the mail and I'm like, oh, why do we do this, right? And in the end, like months later, I look back and I'm like, well, that was annoying, but we dealt with it, right? You don't want that to stop you from investing.
Right. So we're going to talk about four key areas tonight or today or in the morning, whenever you're listening to this, where, you know, that you need to look out for and try to understand. And there's, look, we could do a list of 30, quite honestly, but let's not get bogged down. Four key areas that can identify and help you find an investor-friendly city. You want to kick it off? Number one, permits.
I can't read your writing.
Wow.
I was like, armpits? What does that mean?
You're making fun of my writing. Your writing looks like slanted.
It does. Well, look at that upside down. So we wrote these out on a little note card. Look at it upside down. It looks like armpits.
That's true. Yeah. So
clearly,
so number one is armpits. You want to make sure that your
investors don't invest in an armpit town.
So stay out of armpits. No, the first one are permits. Permits. So when you're pulling permits, for instance, we live in the state of New Jersey, and we've done a lot of properties in the state of New Jersey. I work with a lot of flippers who will do, you know, multi-million-dollar homes. I've wholesaled hundreds of houses in the state of New Jersey. And one of the big things that keeps investors from moving forward is having to pull permits. Because when you've got a lot of cash tied up in a $400,000 rehab and every day is costing you money on a rehab and the city is so stinking slow to get back to you about pulling electrical permits and pulling plumbing permits and pulling roofing permits and all of those things, it really inhibits – and it's such a – let me just go on a little bit of a rant.
No, I'm going to interrupt you. Don't go on a rant because I know where you're going with this.
No, what I'm going to say is that if cities were smart and they wanted to have investment in their town, they would likely, you know, speed up this process. The mayor of that particular town would say, you know what? How can maybe meet with local investors and say, what would make our town more favorable for investment?
Right. Well, you know, one of the ways we figure out how friendly a town is for the whole permitting process is to go to a RIA meeting or talk to other contractors, because we've done that in just in our own neighborhood. We've talked to, we were bidding out a job on our old house and we talked to three or four contractors and, you know, know, you sort of just go down the list, like this town's good and fast, this town's expensive and slow, this town, you know, it takes five times to schedule the inspection with the inspector, the inspectors don't show up on time, you know.
And you're waiting there 3 hours.
Like, they've got a reputation with the contractors, and the contractors know this, and they're usually pretty accurate. Like, this town's good, this town's a pain in the butt. So when you go to these RIA meetings, these real estate meetings, you can ask around and say, like, what's the permitting process like in this town? And they will give you a real answer.
Right. So, for instance, the city of East Orange, I mean, it was notorious in New Jersey. It still is, because to get permits, in order to get anything done, you have to then do all of these hoops and hurdles just to get approved, and you don't even own the house yet. And
right. They wanted a certificate of occupancy
before
we didn't buy it yet.
We don't own it. How can we get a certificate of occupancy on the house before we own it? And in order to get the certificate of occupancy, they wanted all of this trash removed from the yard. They wanted all of these, like, boulders and debris cleaned up from the yard. And we're like, do you understand? I'm buying the house.
Right. I don't own it, but you want me to clean it?
And it was like a 95-year-old woman who had dementia, who was shipped off to a hospital. And the house was now vacant. The family inherited the property, and I was buying this inherited property.
Right. So Clayton went down there and was moving cinder block into his truck, into his trunk.
In my trunk, in order to move and clean up this property. And I was like, I don't own this house. I'm technically trespassing.
Plus, it was a $200 permit anyway. You know,
that I had to pay for.
And then Clayton was down there every day, like, is it ready? Is it ready? Is it ready? And I went down there for a deal that I had too. It's not for lack of trying. Those ladies were very kind. But it was just a whole spaghetti jumble of red tape.
Yeah, I mean, so, and no wonder there's so many houses sitting there vacant, and no wonder it's like a bad, you know, high crime area. I mean, come on, mayor, come on, town hall, get your crap together and make it better for people like us to come in and totally renovate a house and put a good family in there.
Right.
Anyway.
Whereas today I went down to pay for a permit for our water filtration system, and I said, do you know where I can do this? And it was like a small building. They're like, you got to talk to Karen. And I went and talked to Karen, and she was kind and she was organized, and everyone had reverence for Karen. It was just like, this is how it's done. And, you know, it was very personable, and it was not that expensive. And, you know, so you just want to sort of ask around, like, what's the reputation for them? Because you want your home to be able to be worked on quickly and efficiently.
Right. So you'll learn a city like East Orange. Stay away. Do not invest.
Because, you're going to get sued by East Orange.
Because, you know.
It's true.
But it's true. And, you know, like, the flippers stay away from there. So why would you want to wholesale houses in order to sell to flippers? If flippers are like, I don't do anything in East Orange because the permitting process is a pain in my butt. So if you're an investor and you're getting started in this process, pulling permits is part of that process. We have to do it on every house that we renovate. And you want it to be easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next one I can read. No, point number two is utilities. And what we mean by that is, are the utility companies friendly to investors? Because we had an experience recently where we were investing in a new suburb, and we had to turn on the utilities for the contractor to go in and do work on the property. So he needed water, clearly he needed electricity and gas. And so I said, okay, I'll do that. Now, it's pretty common that the utility company charges you either a deposit or a one-time fee of a couple $100 if you're putting the name of the utilities in an LLC. If you put it in your own name personally, they don't charge you that. But if you change the name of whoever's taking care of the bill into an LLC or some kind of corporation, they'll charge you some kind of deposit. I'm not sure why that is, but that's been my experience for every time we've done that. So that's fine. But this one power company, they also wanted me to fill out an application by hand and bring it in. And I was like, wait, I don't live there.
We live 1,000 miles away. We're not doing that.
And so they're like, well, okay, let me talk to so-and-so. And they put me on hold, and then they came back and they're like, well, okay, you can fill out the application by hand, but you can't email it until it's notarized. I'm like, what? Like, in the year 2017, I should be able to just, like, click some buttons on
to
a
set
web
up power.
Page.
Yeah, set up power. I got to get something notarized.
So I went down. Thankfully, my bank offers free notary, and got it done and sent it back. And but it was like, and then once I had the application approved, then they said, now you have to call this payment line to give us that couple hundred dollars because you're putting it in the name of the business. Plus they needed the incorporation documents and the EIN number and all of that stuff for the business. So then I called and I made the payment, and then I had to call them back and somehow find the right person and say, okay, here's my approval code for making that payment. Now, can you flip on the power? And they said, okay, now we need to make an appointment to go down there. Can you meet us at the property? I'm like, no, chick, I don't live there. So we got it taken care of. And again, these people could not have been kinder, but it was very challenging to not live there and get this up and running. So I wish that I had known that, because the whole time I'm thinking, oh, I wish we hadn't done this.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to number three, we have a little programming note that we'd like to ask something of you. The reason we're able to do this show free of charge is because we have some great sponsors that are able to take care of our website and other things, and they're able to be on our show as sponsors. But we need to do a little survey in order for them to know more about our audience. We'd also like to know more about who's listening. And we know we have tens of thousands of people that listen every week, but we'd love to know a little bit more about you. It would help us out tremendously if you would just simply go to podcast.study. That's the website. It takes 5 minutes. It's a totally anonymous survey. You just fill out, you just click on the Investing in Real Estate podcast as the podcast that you listen to. And then it takes you through like a series of a few questions about, you know, the types of things you like to buy, the types of things you like and are interested in. And it helps our sponsors learn more about who's actually listening to our show. So the website again is podcast.study, and yes, totally anonymous. Again, the website
is podcast.study. So while that's you're right, eating your falafel for lunch, just call up this website, do a little clickety click, tell us about you. We would very much appreciate it, because we're doing something for you, right? We're sitting
here we try to provide some value.
Right. So you do this for us, and then we're going to be lifelong best friends.
Right. So it really would mean the world to us. Just take 5 minutes out of your day. Click on podcast.study is the website, and then click on the Investing in Real Estate podcast. Again, go through a series of questions. And because I end up buying a lot of different things from different podcasts from the sponsors because they're relevant to me as a listener, the podcasts that I listen to. And so I will buy like Blue Apron, food delivered to our house. I'll buy like Warby Parker, like glasses, like sunglasses. I bought Harry's razors.
Right.
That's what
personal
I get.
Personal grooming.
Yeah. So like we like to know that stuff. And those are the things that show up at my house in boxes on a regular basis. So we would love to know what types of things you like to, to buy. And that really helps our sponsors figure out what type of an audience we have. And then therefore we can continue to do the show for free because we've got great sponsors on here. I mean, they pay for the website. It helps pay for the bandwidth, all the hosting fees that we have to provide for the show. So, we have to pay for all of that.
Addiction to coffee.
Right. My coffee addiction. Someone needs to pay for that.
Right.
Right. So please, please go over to podcast.study and just take 5 minutes and fill out that form. It would mean the world to us.
It's so nice that you said please.
I mean that. I really mean that. Thank you so much for you send wonderful emails all the time to us. Why not just also send us, do a little survey for us as well? Podcast.study. I love you all. Thank you so much. Now back to the show. All right. Number three on our list of investor-friendly city things you need to pay attention to.
Okay. We want to talk about licenses for landlords, whether or not you need a license to thrill.
A little Guns N' Roses. Very good. License to chill.
License to kill.
So getting a landlord license, some municipalities, it's just a way for them to make money off of you. Like you'll have to do like a $50 a year thing to get, and then they have to come out and approve you basically. So you want to.
They don't always go there.
No. In fact, they're pretty darn lazy about it. Like in Michigan, they say that they do it, but they don't, and they don't even care.
We have one in Pennsylvania that they just like cash the check and put the paper in the filing cabinet, and that's pretty much it. And then the next year I'll get another thing in the mail. It's like, where's your $50 to be a landlord? It's just the price of doing business. But not all municipalities charge this.
No, almost none of them do. So you just need to be aware. You'll find it later sometimes, and sometimes they don't even really enforce it. I can tell you that they don't enforce it. Sometimes they do, and they're a little bit more heavy-handed. But as you're beginning to invest in certain areas, just ask that question, you know, do you have a landlord license fee that I need to pay for? Because that's going to, you know, it may eat into your ROI a little bit. It's going to be minimal, typically maybe $50.
It's like $50, yeah.
Per year, and you have to renew it. But it's something that you want to ask and make sure, because again, as you start adding up these costs, it starts to eat into your return on investment.
Right. But, you know, those are up for cut in the Trump administration, so we won't see.
What's up for cut? Yeah.
I'm just kidding. No. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that it's not standardized, though, right? Like, it's just some cities have it and some cities don't. It's not a statewide law. It's not even a countywide law. It's just some cities do and some cities don't. So you have to figure it out. And didn't you say you have a video about that? So you can go to Clayton's YouTube channel if you'd like to hear more about that specific challenge.
Right. So on the Morris Invest YouTube channel, Morris Invest, we've got, I think, about 96 videos there now, and they're all pretty comprehensive. They're all on all these specific topics. And so we do have a video specific to landlord licenses. All right. Number four on our list of investor-friendly tips is landlord-friendly. So number four is your town landlord friendly? Now, this is kind of a catch-all. This means a number of different things. This means, you know, how annoying is it to get an eviction on your tenant in a property? What kind of a relationship can you hope to have with the judge in a particular county? Now, certain areas are more landlord friendly.
What do you mean by that? That sounds illegal.
Say that again?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, look, if you've got...
the relationship.
Well, like you just mentioned with Karen at the permitting office,
Okay.
She might fast track a permit for you because she knows you've done 10 houses. She knows you by name. Hey, Natalie, how are you? Yeah, we got your permits over here. I put them in a little stack for you. You know, it's like... But certain areas, and I have another video on landlord-friendly states also, you can check that out, but it's about, you know, where are the states that have the most landlord-friendly laws for evictions and other things, quite honestly. But for instance, Texas, the taxes are higher, so I don't invest there, but Texas is very landlord-friendly when it comes to evictions. You can get a tenant out of a property in Texas very fast, and I mean, it's so fast you wouldn't believe it. And Indiana is second. Indiana is second on the list for landlord-friendly states for eviction processes, meaning they don't pay. That judge has no tolerance for that, and they will fast-track an eviction to get that person out of there. You know, some will make you post like 30 days notice and do all these other things, and certain states are very fast. Well, there are certain states that are very, very slow. New Jersey, very slow, and it's very tenant-friendly.
California, the same.
Tenant-friendly. And so what that means is that you can have squatters sitting in a property not paying, filing kind of notices with the county, and you're the landlord, and you have a property that can't produce cash flow for 9 months because you have a tenant squatting in your property going through the bureaucracy, and you're screwed. Right. As a landlord, you're screwed, which makes no sense. You own the property.
And in California, the laws about keeping a deposit to pay for damage are very tenant-friendly. I've mentioned many times on this podcast my renters who had the dog that peed and pooed all over the carpet. And there were a lot of things that they had done to damage my condo that I could not – They had to agree what they were going to pay for. I couldn't say, like, look, the paint's all messed up. You put huge holes in the wall. The carpet's messed up. Now that, you know, like, they had to approve the things that I could charge them through
their
deposit.
That's ridiculous. Good old California.
I couldn't just keep the deposit and make that apartment hold again. And she, like, this renter, she clearly was terrible person, and she knew the laws as to what.
And this
she
was
could...
an A-class property, $500,000 condo.
This is down on Harrison Street in the heart of downtown San Francisco. So yes, you know, clearly a neighborhood, and I couldn't even keep her deposit to repaint because, and they had put like wall studs, anchors, not just like hang a pretty picture, but like anchors in the wall. And, you know, the dog peed all the way through to the carpet pad. And not just the carpet, but the padding underneath was pee stained. And it was disgusting. And I only could keep like $700 of their deposit to pay for very specific things.
But in the state of like Indiana, for instance, you can keep it all. And you have 30 days to send them their deposit back if there are no damages, and you don't have to prove anything. I mean, you do, but of course, most of our tenants, you know, it's going to be like a quick tenant turnover. But if they've done some serious damage to the property, which they don't really ever do that, then you know you can keep that deposit. But most of the time, you're going to send it back in 30 days. But the eviction process can be very fast in landlord-friendly states. So you want to make sure you understand what that looks like. Also, what does it mean to be landlord-friendly? It means, you know, are you dealing with like a board of health? Right, that code violations, they're going to drive around and try to make money off of you with code violations. Now, they tend to go to cities where there are a lot of investors. Places like Memphis have really terrible at code violation patrol, meaning they'll drive around. If you've got high grass in the property, your tenant hasn't mowed it, they're going to slap you with a fine and you're going to be on the hook unless your tenant pays. You can take it out of their rent. I mean, you can take it out of there or tack it onto their rent or mm-hmm. those types of things. Atlanta is one of the worst for code violations for health department.
How do you know this?
Research. So, okay. And you just talk to investors, but I've done videos on this specific topic. I've done a podcast episode on this exact issue for code violations in the worst departments, but Florida can also be bad. Indiana is not as bad, but you do have code. You do have health department. And so what happens is, like,
I mean, it's hard to like take because some of them are pretty ridiculous. We got a code violation on one of our properties for weeds in January.
Right.
It was
right. There was snow on the ground.
Degrees outside.
And there was a foot of snow.
Like, there are no weeds in that yard, but right. We still had to go and deal with that total and utter cow dung.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. When you've got a great property management team that handles it, it's part of doing business. So if you're the reason that like where we invest is so investor heavy, it's because the ROI is so high and the demand for rentals is so high and the job market is fantastic. So there's a reason there's investors there because they know we get it. We get the data, right? Atlanta, you know, you buy a house like three times as expensive as what we do, but there's a lot of investors in Atlanta over the past 10 years, right? And so these code violation companies, I mean, with the county, the reason they're there is because of those hedge funds. Those hedge funds came in, they bought up like 2,000 properties. They let them sit there vacant because they didn't have the crew to, they didn't have the crews and construction crews to get them rehabbed. They let them sit there vacant and then they would suddenly, they would become, fall into disrepair. And so they saw it as a cash cow, as a cash opportunity for these, for the county to start slapping $50 fines. $50 turns into $200 if they don't take action on it. So anyway, we've got a great team, like at least on our team, that we actually have a former employee of the code department who's on our staff. So we know how to deal with it. We get it taken care of really fast. But not everyone does that, right? So you just need to make sure. You got to know how to deal with it. That's the bottom line. For instance, I was in one of our neighborhoods today. We just got slapped with a code violation for a board up on.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah. So while I was in Indianapolis, we got a code violation on one of our properties that we personally own, and I went there today and I just started laughing. I was like,
I didn't even understand it. Like, what does it mean? $77 for board up
means that there was like when you board something up, it means like there's like a vacant window or maybe there's a garage window that's cracked out.
But it wasn't clear. Do they want us to board it up or they are giving us a fee because there was a board up?
No. So what they're doing is they're asking you to board up part of the house because there's like a window missing in the garage pane of a little glass and that's the thing, you don't know. And they send these form letters with like 10 reasons why it could be one thing, but it's like gutters, downspouts missing, blah, 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 all these things. And it's like,
what did it look like?
So I got to the house. There was nothing wrong at all. because I'm buying the house next door to it. It was a total dump. And we're like, I was there meeting with the owner because we're buying this other house next door. I wanted to, you know, have two side by side. This house, our tenant runs a daycare out of this house. It's gorgeous, totally taken care of, totally well maintained. I looked at every window, checked the roof. There is nothing at all wrong with the house. And I even sent my head of construction over there. Nothing. So what they do is they send these letters out in the hopes half the time that you're not smart enough to deal with them.
Right.
So what we'll do is we'll take pictures.
And we'll send them a picture of our middle finger.
Right. And no, they have to send the inspector out.
Okay.
We've met with their supervisors, and actually the supervisors have put the smack down on some of these inspectors. And, you know, that's how you just have to deal with them. It's a business.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be smart and know how to handle these things, you know.
I got that from This American Life. I heard a podcast of a guy who did jury duty, and that sometimes people would respond with their jury duty notice with a picture of their middle finger, meaning they're not going to show up.
That's pretty good.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Okay, good.
So I actually went down to the Board of Health and shot a little video there. I'm going to put together a video on how to deal with the Board of Health.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you drive, you go to these Boards of Health and it looks like a 1960s, like bureaucratic building, you know, like the DMV or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you just need to know how to deal with them. It's a fact of life. If you've got a great team that handles it for you, that's all that matters. But that's something that you should take into account. Is a city landlord friendly? And where we invest, they are landlord friendly. I mean, bottom line is you can get a tenant out quickly. You can put a new tenant in quickly. You can get utilities turned on quickly. We don't have to pay, you know, all kinds of ridiculous notarizing fees to get things notarized. So
now no city is going to be able to check off all four of these boxes, right? But you just have to sort of do your research and set your expectations, because even if you are in a city that's rates poorly on all four of these points, but you can find an awesome deal, you still should go for it. But just set your expectations that there's going to be a few more speed bumps.
And it's going to take you longer. So maybe you want to add a month to your rehab time because it takes you longer to pull permits, or it takes you longer to turn on the utilities because you have to go down and meet with Mildred and get it notarized before you can do it and get your contractor in there. Or just keep a vigilant eye for the Board of Health so that they don't annoy you and pester you. You know, they're just like those things. You're right. You can not even have all four of them, but you can try to mitigate them as much as possible. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you so much. And don't forget, head over to podcast.study and click on that little survey for us and fill out that form. We'll be back here next time with another episode of Investing in Real Estate.